How's it going? It's Steve, and this is another episode of Victims of Fun. As usual, we are here at Mr. Fujiwara's Ramen Cafe, near the Chiba District, across from the Sailor Moon shop, in beautiful Tokyo. It's a pretty busy night tonight. There's a lot of people here, so you're going to hear a lot of background noise. And, that's just how it is when you do a live podcast. Again, Mr. Fujiwara actually asked me if he could record a commercial that I can stick in the podcast, and of course I had to agree because he lets me do this here for free. And so later on you'll be hearing the debut of Mr. Fujiwara's self-produced commercial, which will be pretty interesting. I've heard it, it's whatever, you know, but you know, you gotta take care of the people that take care of you, I guess. So, there we go. Again, I want to thank the folks at Anchor for providing such a great software platform for doing this podcast. Anchor is very, very simple and very easy to use. I actually recorded the sponsorship commercial for them that I'm going to play later, too, because, I want to start making money. I need money. Very expensive habits I have to maintain. And just so you know, we now have a Facebook page. So if you go on Facebook and you go to Victims Fun, because apparently Victims of Fun was taken a long time ago by somebody who doesn't even use it. So if you go on Facebook and you type in Victims Fun, that's the actual URL address, but you can just do a search for Victims of Fun and you'll see we have our own Facebook page. I'll be posting links to the podcast there and maybe some messages and stuff, and it's a good place to leave comments. And don't forget, if you go to the website for the podcast on Anchor, you can actually support me by hitting the little support button, and you can throw me some cash, which I'm going to need. You know, I'd like to upgrade my equipment, and you know, everybody needs money. I need money. I know a lot of you have money, so, you know, throw me like $5 a month or something. I don't know. If I can get 100 people listening to this thing at $5 a month, that's 500. That's like my rent is paid, you know, which is kind of cool. You know, I'll just eat ramen all the time. Yeah, I mean, if Joe Rogan can sell his podcast to Spotify for $70 million, you know, if I can make like $2,000 a month doing this, I'm happy because, you know, my monetary needs are very, very, I guess, kind of slim, basically. You know, I don't know. Is slim a good word? Or I'm kind of frugal. I'm not cheap. I'm frugal. It's good to be frugal. But there's a lot of creative people out there in the world. You know, which is always good. There's a lot of podcasts. I think I read something that 35 to 40% of Americans listen to a podcast every day. And the people who listen to podcasts the most apparently are people over the age of 35. And you would think it would be younger people, you know, because they're all into that whole social media thing, you know, doing TikTok and Snapchat and everything. And you think they'd be the ones listening the most, but apparently it's, you know, apparently it is older people over the age of 30 who are listening the most to podcasts. So I'm hoping this will work out. You know, like I said, you know, if I can do good and make a tiny profit, you know, supplement everything else I do, it'd be great. I mean, if I made enough to pay my rent, I'd be happy as a clam. But a lot of people are doing good with their creativity. Like in the old days, you know, pre-internet, if you wanted to write a book or have your own radio show before the internet, and you had to go get a radio license, become a DJ, and hope you get a job and probably start out, you know, bringing coffee to the DJs or cocaine, because back in the 80s they were all on coke. And good luck getting on the air. And then you have the FCC to deal with, and you have to log everything you do. And then, you know, as these companies start buying up all the radio stations, you have playlists and you can't deviate. And there's very few actual, like, DJs anymore on the radio who, like, choose the songs they want to play. And I remember reading back in the day, like, in the 60s and 70s, and a lot of stations, the music they played was whatever the DJ had in his garage. You know, he would bring his own vinyl in and spin it. I guess even a lot of college radio now, it's just pre-programmed stuff, and the DJs are just there to read the bumpers and the commercials and make commentary. You know, I can't stand the morning comedy radio shows. Some of them are just horrid. I mean, absolutely horrible. It's like, I remember when I lived in Florida, I had a job that was like 40 minutes away, and I would leave at like 6 in the morning to get there. And there was a morning show. I mean, you had things like Bubba the Love Sponge, who was horribly untalented and stupid. But then you had your local DJ. I want to say it was 105.9, I think. Rick Stacy, that was his name. He's still on the air. Had the worst morning show on the planet. Just, I wanted to hear music. I didn't want to hear stupid, unfunny, failed stand-up comedian DJ crap. And, you know, it was absolutely horrifying. And I don't like that. I want to hear music in the morning. Maybe some news, some traffic reports. You know, I want to hear some DJ up there making jokes that, you know, wouldn't fly at like a late night show in the Catskills. It's just horrifying to me. But back in the day, you know, it was a lot of work to become a radio DJ. Now anybody can do it. I mean, you can do podcasts, and there's actual software you can get to do an actual radio station. I mean, I guess the difference is an internet radio station is kind of like a podcast that goes 24/7. But apparently people set up to where they'll have a dedicated computer to it, and they'll just stream 24 hours of music and pre-recorded bumpers and just come in and talk. And, you know, they have their own radio stations. They set the whole thing up with the ads play automatically. And I guess as long as the power doesn't go out, it keeps going. But I couldn't do that. That's too much work. That's too much dedication. It's, you know, I like to enjoy life, you know. And like this podcast, you know, as much as I love doing it, I'm starting to become addicted to it. I can't see devoting 24 hours a day. I mean, I've read of people who do, you know, they'll do like one podcast a week, but it's like 24 hours of prep work before they actually record it. And then it's like 10 hours of post-production. And I'm thinking to myself, okay, yeah, it sounds all slick and professional, but it's a lot of work. I mean, just turn the mic on and talk. I mean, put an opening and an ending and a transition and, you know, maybe some commercials and you're done. Why are you spending 24 hours of pre-prep and then 10 hours of post-production? I mean, that's, I don't know, just, and then a lot of the people have it all scripted out, what they're going to talk about. I was never into that. I just turn the mic on and I talk. And, you know, some people like that, some people don't, but, you know, I'm more comfortable naturally just speaking about things. And, you know, if I had a script in front of me, I'd be like, oh, okay, I gotta read this. I'm better improvising. I improvise everything I do. This podcast is never scripted. This podcast is never planned. I just talk, and I just go. It's like the Joker said, you know, I'm like a dog that chases cars. I wouldn't know what to do if I caught one. I wouldn't know what to do if you threw a script in front of me and said, this is your podcast. I'd be like, what the hell is this? You could lay it out line by line, block by block, and I would mess it up because the instinct for me to just talk naturally is just too strong. But I mean, anybody can do a podcast. It's especially with Anchor. My God, Anchor. You know, I remember when I started thinking about doing a podcast, and I was like, oh, this is going to be so much work. I got to get specialized equipment and everything. And then you know, I saw Anchor as a Facebook ad. You can do it from my phone. you know, so I have Anchor on my phone. I don't use it on my phone. I have an iPhone XR, but it's on there because in case I'm out somewhere and I see something interesting, like maybe an alien invasion or Godzilla attack or ninjas, or I run into the Emperor of Japan, you know, I want to be able to hit my podcast button on Anchor and record some stuff and then add it to the main show. I can do it. You know, it's right there. I could do the entire podcast on my phone. The sound quality wouldn't be that good. But, you know, there it is. You have the ability to do it. And pretty much you just, you know, you go to the website and just set up your account and you're done. And I record this podcast on GarageBand, actually, on my Mac. Because I like the controls and everything, and it filters some of the stuff out. And plus, when you do a live one like I do, it's good to have a mixer to keep the background noise to a minimum. I mean, I know you can still hear the people around me, but it's not overwhelming. But, so it was easy to get into podcasting with this, with Anchor. It was fantastic. And, you know, anybody could do it. You know, you could do a podcast of anything you want, man. There's people out there who are doing just, like, recipes or just reading children's stories or, you know, just doing commentary on anything, financial advice, mental health awareness, which I think is great. I think there's a lot of podcasts that have to deal with mental health issues, and I think that's very important. And I think those podcasts are the ones that should be listened to a lot, because there's the people that do them a lot of times have went through or going through the conditions they're talking about. So the people who are going through, you know, depression or suicidal thoughts, they can relate to these people better. And I think sometimes it's better to listen to somebody who's been through it or going through it than an actual, like, medical doctor or something, because you can relate. You know, if I had a mental issue of something, I'd want to speak to somebody who has it or had it and beat it or is dealing with it or living with it successfully, than I would some clinical doctor who's never had it but studied it. You know, it's like going to take your car to get fixed. You want a mechanic who's been working on cars forever, or you want a guy who's been reading about fixing cars but never actually touched a wrench? I'd rather talk to the guy covered in grease who's worked on them. You know, I'm kind of making that analogy. But, you know, you get, I mean, it's fantastic, and I think that's one of the good things of the internet. There's a lot of bad that the internet and social media has brought out. I mean, we're more divided than ever because of social media, which was supposed to bring us together. But I think the whole podcast thing is fantastic because there's so much good stuff out there. And a lot of people do it, and they're basically paying nothing. I mean, they're paying nothing to do the podcast. They're not making any money. They do it for the love of it, and they have something to say, which I think is great. I like doing this, but I want to get paid. You know, I want to make money. I'm not going to lie. I'd love to make money from this, but I love talking. I've always loved talking, and I love talking about interesting things, and I guess eventually I'm going to have people on the podcast, and eventually I want to try to get it to where I can have people actually Skype in and get their audio on while I'm talking and everything. I'll work into that, you know, because this is still the beginning. There's only been 17 episodes. You know, I'm still getting my feet wet, working the kinks out of the system, but it's getting there. You know, it's a slow burn process. I mean, it's not a sprint to me. It's a marathon, you know, type of thing. I'm hoping within a year this will be like my main source of income. But, I mean, we'll see. If not, I'm going to keep doing it. I like it. And I've gotten some feedback. People seem to like it. So there you go. I mean, I think it's good. But opinions may vary. All right, so it is time. We're going to hear from Mr. Fujiwara in his commercial. So we're going to... Here's the debut of Mr. Fujiwara's Top Ramen commercial that he made himself. I'll be back in a minute. Thank you.
Oh, do you see his Mr. Fujiwara?
you will come down to Mr. Fujiwa Top Ramen Shop. All you weebo otaku westerner walk around anime district. You're very fat. So you come ramen shop, eat ramen. Then you go walk around, look at anime girl. You will come down to Mr. Fujiwara Top Ramen Shop. We have very good ramen, very good price. If you eat four bowl ramen, you get plastic Sailor Moon doll. That's Mr. Fujiwara Top Ramen, Chiba District, right across from the Sailor Moon shop. You come down now. And we're back. That was certainly an interesting commercial. I gotta hand it to Mr. Fujiwara. I mean, there you go. I'm sorry if anybody was offended by that, but you know, it is his place. So continue on that theme of people being, you know, taking advantage of the internet to be creative. And, you know, I remember back in the old days, I used to write a lot. Short stories, plays, music, poetry, stuff like that, back when I was young. And it was impossible, next to impossible, to get published. You had to send out, and this is before email and stuff, and you had to send out hundreds of letters to publishers and literary agents all over the country for a 99.5% rejection rate. I mean, you couldn't become an author unless you knew somebody or had already had a catalog of like 15 books. I mean, you could self-publish, but you paid a ton of money for it back then. And back in the day, self-publishers were seen as like, well, you know, you weren't good enough to get a real book deal, so you had to self-publish. And literary agents and publishing houses, they wouldn't touch you because you self-published. And they just wouldn't. I mean, the Bible was self-published, and, you know, everybody was good with that. But, you know, you had to kick your way into the door, or kick the door in. And you were constantly submitting to everything. Every writing competition, every magazine. I mean, Paris Match, however you want to pronounce it. It's Paris Match. Any Reader's Digest, anything. You had to submit stuff. And if you did hear back from people, it was always, oh, your stuff doesn't suit our needs at the moment, but keep trying. You had to know somebody, basically, to get your foot in the door. And if you did get published, you got no money for your first book because you had no leverage. You know, you couldn't say, yeah, this book's going to be popular, I want $1 million for it. No, forget it. You would, by the time the publishing houses took their fees for publishing the book, for editing the book, for marketing the book and everything, you were making maybe 50 cents on a copy or something. I mean, it was a racket. It was the same way with the music industry. I mean, those artists back then got ripped off. I mean, the record companies were taking 90% of all their money. And it's the same thing if you're a writer. Now, you had a lot of genre fiction back then. So if you were a genre writer, if you wrote pure, like, sci-fi or pure fantasy, and you could pump those books out every couple of months, there was the whole genre fiction thing. And you stood a better chance of getting published there. But these were, like, paperbacks that, like, were sitting, in the old days, they'd be sitting in the rack in the supermarket or in the special section of the bookstore. You know, and they sold the paperbacks for like $2-3. But they had a large fan base because people would eat up sci-fi or horror or fantasy stuff. And, you know, the books were pretty much all the same. You know, hero goes on a quest, saves the damsel in distress, fights some orcs and goblins on the way, has some companion, wizards, crap like that. Sci-fi was the same thing. Aliens invade, or you're somewhere where you encounter an alien and then stuff happens. And people would recycle their plots and just pretty much change the setting and the name of the characters and what went on. They'd pump them out. Like 10, 15... There were people writing one book a month, but it was genre. It was a specific niche market genre fiction. And they'd make money from it, but you had to really know your market. And of course, you know, the fantasy and the sci-fi stuff is broken down into subcategories. You know, fantasy stuff involving, you know, like Lord of the Rings stuff, fantasy sci-fi, fantasy horror, fantasy historical fiction. Then you had sci-fi, then you had realistic sci-fi, and sci-fi broken down into, you know, subplot, subgenres from there. So if you found your niche and you knew how to write it, you know, back then you could actually do pretty good. But, I mean, if you were just trying to be like a normal writer, you know, forget it. And back then, I don't know if they have them still today, they probably do. Back then you had those Harlequin romance novels, and, you know, you always saw them in the line at the supermarkets, and it was always some guy without a shirt on who looked like he was just walked off the pages of, like, the Greek god handbook. And he either had short hair with a beard, like a close-shaved beard, or he had long hair like Fabio. Fabio was like the model for all that stuff back then. And he's on the cover, some big-chested woman, and half her dress is falling off, and it always had titles like, you know, Forbidden Love Romance, you know, Hot Nights and Catalina, you know, Rescued from My Lover's Slave Pit. I don't know, whatever. You know, it was always that, but people would buy those things by the dozens, and the people who were writing those books were making bank, because that was a particular genre market. It was a Harlequin romance, and it was 99% women, I'm assuming, were buying these things, because they were very women focused, which actually was pretty good, because, you know, it was one of the few genres where the women were highlighted, where the women were the main characters. Because back then, you know, everything was men. But this was something specifically for women, geared towards women, written from a woman's point of view. I know maybe that sounds sexist, because everybody's asked about a point of view, but you know what I'm getting at. And it was good in a way, because it made the women characters front and center. And a lot of people don't realize about Harlequin romances is that started the whole thing, because before that, women were like secondary characters. They always had to be rescued by the man. You know, they always were in distress or whatever. But these Harlequin romances, as you started reading them and you got into them, a lot of times the women were pretty badass, and they were the ones in control, and they were the ones choosing, you know, their own paths, and the men were there either as equals or, you know, a kind of anti-hero type of thing. But the women were the focus of those stories, which is good, because that paved the way for, you know, strong female literary type of things, which is good, because, you know, I mean, yeah, it can't always be about men. And I'm a guy, and I'm a very manly conservative guy, and even I used to think that, you know, wow, every movie I watch, like, a woman has to be rescued. That's bullshit. I mean, come on, you know. If you study history, like I did, in the Second World War, a lot of the Russian soldiers, the most effective and savage ones were the women. The top Soviet sniper in the entire war was a woman. So it's very egocentric, I think, to just assume a man's got to be like the front and center of every literary work and whatever. I don't know, that's just me. You know, I've always been very comfortable with that type of thing. I don't, you know, strong women never scared me. I actually prefer that than some mewling little kitten that I can just, you know, get to do whatever I want. I mean, that's kind of fun too, in a certain way. I mean, I am living in Japan. But, so I want to talk about something, because I have a friend I've known for quite a long time. Met her in Prague. Her name's Sarah Bailey. I've known Sarah... Oh, God. Sarah, I know you're listening. And I think this is... When did we meet? Like 2003? Something, so it's been like 20 years I've known her. And a few years ago, Sarah started writing. And she's a pretty successful author now. And she writes some very interesting things. I mean, she describes herself... Here, I'm going to read this from her Facebook page. She writes a lot of... I don't want to say 50 Shades of Grey, because Sarah's stuff is more artistic. I thought 50 Shades of Grey was a horribly written book, but everybody ate it up because it was what it was. But from a structure point of view, the book was not good. You know, people eat McDonald's, but it's a horrible hamburger. Whatever. She writes about really dark, erotic, and paranormal type romances, which I think is pretty cool. I like the dark stuff. I mean... Oh, you know, my mother watches all these things on Hallmark, and they're always nice, bright, cheerful, you know, semi-romantic type of things. That's great. I love that. I love the dark stuff, too. So I'm going to read this from her Facebook page, and this is coming right from Sarah. And she says, I write about human beings falling in love. Flawed, damaged, bruised, and broken human beings. I write real people who have problems and aren't perfect, a reflection of the world around me. The world I see and you see, that sums me up as a writer. See, I like that. I like when the characters in the book are real and not perfect. Like Mary Sue is the term. Mary Sue is like Rey Skywalker. She's perfect in everything she does. No flaws, can't fail, you know, knew how to use the Force without being taught, could beat, you know, Kylo Ren in a lightsaber fight without ever training. I mean, come on. That's a Mary Sue. A perfect character. They don't exist. So I like the fact that she writes about real people. Continue. If you want to take a chance on my books, I know this. I don't sugarcoat the truth. I bring the angst, the passion, the fire, and I will probably break your heart. But I promise I'll put it back together again by the end. See, I like that. I like stuff like that that rips your soul apart and makes you feel. I mean, feeling pain is what reminds us we're alive. Because if everything's always perfect, you get into sort of this like narcotic bliss about things. Everything's wonderful. Everything's great. You need pain sometimes to remind you that you're human, that you're alive. Okay. Official bio. This is, again, Sarah's webpage. Sarah writes dark, reverse harem, contemporary, erotic, and paranormal romances. She adores all forms of steamy romance and can always be loved with a book or 10 on her Kindle. She loves anti-heroes, alpha males, and flawed characters with a little bit of darkness lurking within. Her writing buddies nicknamed her the Queen of Steam. For her pulse-racing sex scenes, which will leave you a little hot under the collar. I've read some of her stuff. A little hot under the collar is an understatement. It's basically, you read her stuff, if you're a guy, you gotta go take a cold shower. Seriously. She's very descriptive. She's from Sussex in the UK. And, she's always been a reader. She's always been in the movies and stuff as long as I've known her. And I remember, I think she was living in Scotland near Loch Ness, and I asked her if she ever saw Nessie, and she never did. She actually did something really cool for me. Back when Godzilla, the American Godzilla movie, not the really bad one with Matthew Broderick, but the recent one, you know, Godzilla, King of the Monsters, Godzilla vs. Kong. When the Godzilla movie came out, there was a magazine in Britain, I think it was Empire or something, that had a whole special edition devoted to Godzilla, and it wasn't available in the United States, so I asked Sarah, and she bought it and sent it to me, and it's part of my prize collection now, because I'm a big Godzilla fanatic. So she did that for me. And she's cute. Actually, she's hot. All right, Sarah's hot as hell. She really is. She's got the best voice. So she lives in the Scottish Highlands, and she's married. And she's a big gamer chick, and she's always stealing her husband's Xbox, which is pretty cool. I've never met her husband or talked to him, but he seems like a pretty cool guy just based on Facebook. And she's stupidly in love with him, which is really cool. I like that. So she's got a bunch of web pages and stuff. SarahBaileyWriter.com. SarahBaileyWriter.com. She has a Facebook page, Sarah Bailey Author. Okay, now she's got a ton of, I can't even begin to tell you. She's got so many books it would take me 4 hours to go over them. Right now she's working on something called Our Darkest Dare, which is the final book in the Our Darkest series. Okay, and here we go. So this is one of the things that she put on her Facebook page. Darkest Maze, I think this is called. Yes, Our Darkest Maze. Now listen to the way she describes this. His spite, my derision, our manipulation. If I could describe Logan Benson in two words, they would be heartless and callous. From the moment we met, we were thrown into a maze of our own making, full of lies, hatred, and lust. That sounds like my typical Friday night. One neither of us knew how to navigate. Perhaps it was the way we never backed down from a fight, which proved to be our undoing. Or maybe I had been fooling myself into thinking he could change. A man like him would never see me as anything other than a toy. I was a game to him. One I refused to play. Logan left me with one harsh and unforgiving lesson. He showed me love was meaningless. It only hurt and destroyed those stupid enough to fall into its pit of deceit. Wow, talk about it. Sounds like my life story. When he walked away from the mess that was us, I vowed one thing and one thing alone. I would make him rue the day he ruined me. I had to do that in Palpatine's voice, but that gives you a kind of idea of the type of stuff she writes. This was madness, but I wanted to follow the crazy down its winding path. I wanted to get lost in its effed up maze. I wanted her. Okay, that's the Darkest Maze thing. That she's written, I can't even begin to tell you how many books she's written. And I don't know if she has a whole list, and probably has it on her like website. Let me pull her website up here. I'm trying to do two things at once here. Ah, where is it? I'm going to go to her website. Here we go. Sarah Bailey Writer. I remember, I think it was last year or something, she was doing this series of books, and it was like, here we go. The Dirty Dom book. Now, here's the thing. It was a dominatrix type of thing. But she had a whole series of like the with like the word dirty in it. And I don't mean dirty as far as like, you know, oh, go take a bath. I'm talking dirty like, you know, dirty, like, you know, type of thing. So I used to joke with her on Instagram all the time because she was always coming out with these book titles that had the Dirty series. So she had Dirty Dom, Dirty Cop, Dirty Chef, Dirty Judge, Dirty Author. And I used to Instagram her all the time, and she would either laugh or roll her eyes, and I would throw suggestions at her, like, hey, you have Dirty Dom, Dirty Cop, Dirty Chef, Dirty Judge, Dirty Author. You should have something like, you know, Dirty Plumber, you know, maybe, you know, Dirty Bus Driver, or, you know, Dirty Gynecologist, or something. I think Dirty Cop and Dirty Chef were related to each other. And I used to joke with her. I remember when Dirty Chef came out, I was like, Dirty Chef, I'm like, is he like, oi, I just made you some fish and chips and I dropped it on the ground and now it's all dirty. You know, that's how I used to joke with her about the dirty comment. Oi, I saw you trespassing. I'm going to cuff you and cover you in pig shite. You know, dirty cop type of thing. But you know what I mean. It's erotic romance. Dirty author. Dirty author, that could be like her autobiography. And then she had a lot of paranormal romance, which I like that type of thing, you know. Oh, you better not leave me or I'm going to use my powers and burn you alive. So she's got Demon's Destiny, Vampire's Kiss, Witching Night, Cursed Heart, sounds like my ex-girlfriend, Death's Angel, Lucifer's Cage, Blood Magic. I don't know how she pumps these things out so fast, because, you know, I don't know. And she's got a reverse harem romance retelling of the Four Horsemen of the Apocalypse. That's coming soon, apparently, according to this. Then you have Our Darkest Dare, Our Darkest Maze, Our Darkest Scar, Our Darkest Path, Our Darkest Hour. Now, here's the thing. Our Darkest Hour, I think, starred Gary Oldman as Winston Churchill. So I think she should sue, because apparently they stole her title. Then you had Depraved, Debauched, Derailed, Defied, Deceived. And I suggested to her she should write another one called D's Nuts. But that didn't go over too good. And then you had the Benson Siblings, a series of standalone romances of varying shades of dark and gray. Delve into the stories, and I forget if the Benson people were actually related or not. Are they? You know, I can't remember. Are the Bensons related? Oh, man. The Benson Siblings. Yeah, I guess. Okay. So you have Provoked, Promises, Prohibit, Protect. I suggested she should write one called Probiotic, but never takes my ideas. So then you have another series called the Corrupt Empire series, which is Captive Kidnapping Trilogy. Avery and Alden's stories, Where It All Began, and a catalyst for every other book in my dark universe. So you have Betrayal, Sacrifice, Revenge. Again, that describes my last relationship. And she actually has merchandise on her website. You can actually get Sarah Bailey shirts. Oh, I like that. I wonder if you can get a shirt with her picture on it. That'd be pretty cool. No, I guess not. Can you get a picture with Sarah's... Can you get a shirt with Sarah's picture on it? No, I mean, oh, God, look. She's got tank tops and hoodies and everything. This is pretty cool. Sarah, you need to make a shirt with your face on it. That'd be pretty cool. What else does she have on her website? Homeware. What's home... Oh, God. She's got a mug with something on it that I can't pronounce because I'll get thrown off the air. So anyway, yeah, you need to check her out. She's got a lot, and she's been on a couple of podcasts. I'll have to ask her which one she's been on. I think she does, I want to say she does a regular one. Like, she doesn't do the podcast herself, but she's been on somebody else's podcast where they cover, dark romance, books like this. I know she's been on a couple because I've seen the Instagram posts on it. You can go to her Instagram too. Check her out. What is her Instagram? Sarah Bailey Author. S. Bailey Author. S-B-A-I-L-E-Y Author. So you can go on Instagram and follow her there. Because I know she's been on a couple... podcasts, and you find out which ones and you listen to her. But you know, her stuff is good. She's a good writer. You should check. But the reason I was talking about her, other than the fact I wanted to plug her, because What? Plug her. Oh, my God. I mean, plug her stuff. You know what I mean. Shut up, you perverts. Anyway, the reason why I wanted to champion her stuff is this is a perfect example. Because back in the day, before the internet, she never would have got published. I mean, there's just no way. There's no way she could have broken into this. It's impossible. But with the internet now and the fact that she can self-publish and do all she start out with that and then you self-publish enough and you can get picked up by an actual publishing house, the fact it makes it a hell of a lot easier. It's great. I'm very happy for her that she can do this. Because she deserves the success. She writes a lot of stuff and she's a good girl. I like her. But it just goes to show you that, you know, if you have some sort of creativity, you have an outlet for it. You can podcast, you can self-publish, you can set up a website for your artwork, for your photography, you can go up there and you can record your own vocals singing and play your own instruments and load it up to iTunes. You don't need the recording industry anymore. You don't need the publishing industry anymore. You don't need to go begging to the art people in New York or LA, which is all a scam anyway. You don't need to do that. You can do it yourself, and she's a more than perfect example of that. So I need you to go check out her stuff on Facebook, Sarah Bailey Author. Check out her website, sarahbaileywriter.com. Give her stuff a read, because it's actually really good. So we're going to pause for a commercial, and I have to use the little boy's room, and we'll be right back.
Are you poor? Are you on food stamps? Do you have no credit? Well, you're the type of customer we're looking for down here at Oscar Jackson's Used Car Emporium. We got like 500 cars on the lot, and we take cash and SNAP and EBT cards. I mean, maybe if you show up with a couple of cows, you can walk out of here with a Ford Escort. But we have a very knowledgeable and diverse sales force that treat you with kindness and respect, even though you're poor and you've probably been in jail for meth. We also have free Lynchburg lemonade. You can come down here and you can get some. We have a lot of nice used cars. I got a Ford Escort over here. I got a Chrysler Crossfire over there. So come on down to Oscar Jackson's Used Car Emporium. You get some lemonade and a used car. So to be perfectly clear, so there's no misunderstandings, you come to Oscar Jackson's Used Car Emporium, you're going to get lynched, and I'm going to put a crossfire in your driveway. All right? We're located on Chicken Hollow Road, right across from the Piggly Wiggly. You have a nice day, everybody.
And we're back. One of the things I've seen, and I really don't use it myself except, you know, to watch stuff, is TikTok. And whatever you think about TikTok as far as, like, you know, supposedly the Chinese stealing everybody's information, there's a lot of horrible things on TikTok, but there's a lot of funny stuff too. And my old boss, his name's Mike, he had a heart attack and he can't work anymore. He's home. He got into TikTok and he does a comedy show on TikTok. You know, little snippets of whatever. You know, he's trying to make people laugh and stuff. And he's raising awareness for the American Heart Association, which is a good thing. And I want to give a shout out to him. If you go on TikTok, his username is Grandpa Mike's House. GrandpaMikesHouse. I think he's funny. He's really, he was a funny guy when I worked with him. And he was a very good man. Like, a very, like, kind, giving, good person. Probably the best boss I ever had. He got really screwed over by the company we worked for, especially the guy who was above him. But he's a good guy. I mean, he just, you know, he's kind of like, you know, one of those type of people, if he had nothing and you needed something, he'd somehow get it to you before he'd give it to himself. But he should go on TikTok and look at his channel and check out his comedy stuff. Again, it's Grandpa Mike's House. It's all one word. That's his username on TikTok. And you'll see him. His picture, he's got his little fishing hat on, his glasses. He uses that filter that makes his mouth like four times the size of his face. I honestly wish he'd use his real voice without the filter, but, you know, this is what he likes to do. And his stuff's funny. He's a good guy, and you should definitely support him. But there's a lot of cool stuff on TikTok. You know, there's a lot of horrible stuff. There's a lot of underage girls doing stuff on there. It's disgusting. It's a lot of fighting as far as people posting political stuff and saying, oh, you know, comment on this, and when people comment the opposing political point of view, it gets into a huge fight. And it's horrifying. But, you know, it is what it is type of thing. It's kind of, you know, where I'm on TikTok, but I just watch stuff. I don't really post anything because it's kind of just, it's kind of dumb. I don't like it. But, something I do quite a bit is I play that Pokemon Go thing, because, you know, I got it when I had the problems with my legs, when I had the flushing bacteria and the lymphedema, and the doctor said I needed to walk a lot in order to, you know, get the lymph system in my legs going. So I got this Pokemon Go thing, and it's actually, I became kind of addicted to it. It's pretty, I mean, I like it. It's pretty cool. And I'm on it. And I think I have Dr. Love Grenade is my Pokemon Go thing. And I'm trying to remember how you get your, I'm trying to see what my Pokemon, friend code is, because I figured I'd send it out to anybody listening to it, but my Pokemon name is Dr. Love Grenade, which is, I like it. I've walked 405 kilometers since I got this app. I have a bunch of Pokemon. I have total XP of 7,228,000. I started on 7/10/2016. That's probably, I'm level 35. That's probably not a lot of, maybe it's not that much mileage. I don't know. But, you know, it's, I like it though. It's a good game. Can you get your code up here? I mean, I want to get my game code out because I always want more friends, and for life of me, I can't remember how to pull that up. How do you do this? Yeah, you think they would just have your friend code like right there? You know, it just says friend code, hit this, and there you go. But, okay, here we go, add friend. Okay, so my trainer code is 2045-4451-4410. Again, that's 2045-4451-4410. It's my trainer code on Pokemon Go, which, yeah, there you go. If you wanna do the Pokemon Go thing, I mean, I like it. It's a time waster, but it gives the excuse to walk around and stuff like that, which is kind of cool. Yeah, I like it. But, I think it's pretty cool. But so today's Easter Sunday. And I hope everybody that's celebrating is having a nice one. Remember, Easter growing up, I'd always wake up and there'd be the Easter basket with all my chocolate and everything in it, and it's probably caused all my cavities, but there you go, whatever. That's just how these things are. But, somebody friend me on this Pokemon Go thing. I mean, I have friends that don't really send too many gifts, but, yeah. It's cool. It's all good. But just remember, remember, we have our Facebook page now for Victims of Fun. It's Victims Fun, because, like I said before, somebody stole the of. I don't know, they haven't used it God knows how long, but whatever, squatter's rights. I don't know what the hell that means. So, Victims Fun, and I'm going to be getting an email address for, I got to do that today. I want Victims of Fun at something. I don't know if I want to use Gmail. I want to try to keep this separate. But remember, you can support me by going on the Victims of Fun website on Anchor, which actually is El Stevo. I don't know why it's not Victims of Fun, but it's Anchor FM, ELSTEVEO. It should be Victims of Fun. I don't know why it's El Stevo. Probably because that's my account name. Yeah, I don't know. But anyway, you can go there and you can support me. You can support me by month. $1, $5. I mean, you got $5. $5 a month. Just, if I get 100 people, I'm making $500 a month. I can, pay my rent. And devote more time to podcasting. So, just throw me some cash. I mean, what are you going to do with it, really? You're going to buy cigarettes or drugs or like McDonald's or something? I mean, come on, might as well give it to me. I'll put it to good use. Good use being me. Me, me, me. It's all about me. Throw me some cash. Eventually I'm going to have my Bitcoin address up there, and you can throw me some Bitcoin, and I'll have my Monero address up there. You can throw me some Monero. But Bitcoin. Bitcoin's where it's at. So donate. I mean, that's why I see on Patreon. You got all these horrible people getting tens of thousands of dollars a month thrown at them for making stupid videos where they prank people or make fools of themselves, and everybody's throwing them money. And I'm like, what? I mean, there's this guy. He's a Middle Eastern guy. I think he's American of Middle Eastern descent, and he'll dress up like an Arab, and he'll, the headgear and everything, and he has his buddies with him recording everything. He'll run up to people and throw a briefcase at them and run away, like it's a bomb, and he gets thousands of dollars a month from his Patreon to film these things. And I'm thinking to myself, number one, that's kind of racist, even though he is Middle Eastern. That's kind of stereotypical racist bullshit. And number two, he's going to do that to the wrong person one day, and they're going to pull out a gun and blow his head off. I mean, he's already been beaten up, I think, twice, I saw. He tried to do it in the hood somewhere. And these guys weren't having none of that stuff. I mean, he threw the briefcase down. They chased him down and start kicking the crap out of him. I mean, that's what I would do. because it's just, but that's the type of stuff people are getting money for. They're getting money to make fools of themselves or money to humiliate other people. And it's dumb, like, why? You know? Like, I remember there was this other person, he films YouTube videos where he gets kicked in the family jewels by different things and gets hit in the family jewels by different things. And he gets money for it. And there's this other girl who all she does is eat. I mean, literally, it's a video of her. She doesn't talk. And she just eats. And she makes thousands of dollars a month. People watch her eat. Like, but what the hell is that? But, so, I don't get all that. Why are you throwing money at a person who's eating? Why are you throwing money at a person who's purposely injuring themselves? Give it to me. I'm not going to do any of that. You know, I'm going to pay bills. I'm going to buy better equipment. I'm going to, you know, maybe adopt a turtle or something. I'm thinking eventually I'm going to have Victims of Fun merchandise, but I don't want to have like hoodies and shirts and stuff, and everybody has that. And maybe Victims of Fun, like underwear or socks or something. My own beef jerky. That'd be pretty cool. I don't know if I could actually do that, but, you know, whatever. My own ramen, except Mr. Fujiwara wouldn't let me record here anymore if I had my own ramen brand. Sorry, I got my sake. I have to drink it, because I love sake. But yeah, I mean, there's... But again, on one hand, that's all bullshit that people are getting money thrown at them for that. But on the other hand, it just goes to show you, like, what the internet can do as far as creative outlet. I don't know how creative it is to film yourself getting hit in the nuts all the time, but still, he's making bank, so I gotta give him a level of respect for that. You know, it's, and, you know, for every 100 people that are doing that, there are people who are seriously doing some really wonderful artistic things, either in a podcast or on YouTube or, you know, something, or musicians who never would have got signed doing things, having their music heard. I mean, think about it, back in the day, do you really think Frank Zappa today would get signed? I mean, there's no way in God's great earth. Back in the 60s and 70s, it was so much more open and free because the big companies hadn't taken charge of all the radio stations or record labels. They weren't consolidated, so everybody was fighting for the next up-and-coming thing. But now, like, four companies own 90% of all the radio stations and all the record companies. It's the same old crap that comes out all the time. Do you really think somebody like Frank Zappa would get signed today? Hell no. But if Frank Zappa was around today, in his prime, he'd be all over the internet. Seriously. I mean, seriously. I mean, David Bowie was. John Lennon would have been. But yeah, can you imagine what Frank Zappa would have done with the internet? I mean, my God, what a missed opportunity. But it allows artists like him, an artist we've never heard of and probably never will, to have an outlet. Because for a lot of these people, it's not making money, it's not becoming famous, it's releasing your creativity. You know, you can't hold it in sometimes. You gotta just... It's like me. Even if this podcast bombs out eventually and, you know, I only get a few people listening to it, it's still something I want to do because it's an outlet. And maybe by getting the creative juices flowing, you know, I can succeed in other things in my life. Or it's the same thing, you know, you have people who write who know they're never going to get published, nobody's ever going to read their stuff, they do it anyway because they love to do it. It's an outlet. It's like a pressure valve. It's like relieving the pressure from the pressure valve. And for a lot of people, that's what it is. And in the old days, man, you couldn't do it. But today, anybody can set up a website or a podcast or a YouTube channel and just go to town, man. And there's so much quality stuff out there, but it's so obscured by so much crap. And what angers me is that the crap is the one making most of the money. You know? And there was one, I'm not going to name any, I don't like naming names because some people don't deserve the publicity. There's a girl, she's pushing 40 now, and she's a big YouTuber, and her whole shtick was, I'm a lesbian, and this is my lesbian life, and blah, 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 and she didn't work because she got all her money from Patreon. She got sponsorships, to wear jewelry, certain type of clothing. She went to Dinah Shore every year. Dinah Shore is a big lesbian gathering. She went to Pride all the time. She did all that stuff. She made a lot of money doing it. And then it turns out she wasn't a lesbian the whole time. Okay, she was straight. She had a boyfriend on the side. She was doing it to make money. Because she found out that it was easier to make money pretending to be somebody else than trying to be herself. I'm not going to mention her name and everything because she still has her channel out there. But people were throwing thousands of... I mean, she lived in Los Angeles. Didn't work. All her money to pay for living in L.A., to pay for her car and everything else, was from people throwing money at her because she was a very good-looking woman who was a lesbian, who was very open about everything. And it turns out the whole thing was a lie. But she made bank. And I can't stand stuff like that. But there's a lot of people that do stuff like that. And it takes away from the real people with the real situations and the real problems and the real voices that need to be heard. So you gotta take it good and bad, really. But I guess there's always gonna be people who are gonna try to game the system for gain. I don't know. I try not to. If people like what I do, that's fantastic. If they don't, turn the channel. I'm just trying to be me. I hope I provide some modicum of entertainment past the time, if you're sitting in a dentist office or if you're alone or if you're an over the road trucker. Hey, my hat's off to over the road truckers. They're the backbone of America, and that's a difficult job. Don't let anybody ever tell you, and don't let anybody ever tell you that those truck drivers are stupid, because they're not. They are some of the smartest people on the planet, seriously. And so shout out to all of them if anybody's listening. But I'm going to go eat my Easter dinner. Well, I got to make it. I'm making pork loin. Oh, God, it's going to be good. I got pork loin, olive oil, garlic, rosemary, thyme. I got some mashed potatoes. It's going to be great. So again, remember to check out my friend Sarah. And that's it. So I will see you next time on Victims of Fun. And I wish you all a very happy, healthy, and safe Easter. And we'll see you next time there. Okay? Take care, everybody.